You are now listening to Out of the Blank.
Welcome back. He's back again. It's been what, you were on episode 381 and now we're in the 800s. So it's been a year. The great plague of a pandemic has sweeping our nation.
Yeah. The China virus, as they call it.
That's going to lump me in like a Trump hashtag. Please don't do that one.
We'll try to avoid that. Yeah. I don't want to do that. So how you doing, man? You look good.
Thanks, man. I mean, last time we just did audio only.
This is impressive.
It's a good setup. It's all for show. Really, this is like, look, I just bought a black curtain from
your shower curtain behind you and your, yeah.
I look back at some of my past episodes and I had a famous comedians on and I didn't notice, but that was the time when I just transitioned to video. So I had like, my computer was lower than when I was. So it's like an upward angle. It's not a glorious shot unless you want to see someone's like chin. And it was before I grew like a nice, like a better thick version of the beard than it is now. It's still managing. But I had my bed sheet that was propped up on the window. So you get to see my bed sheet and the sun's still coming through. But then I was like, let's go to Marshall's. Let's deal with the hassle of all the people trying to return shit that they don't know what they're returning. They're just like, I want to make my Saturday the worst thing ever and just stand in a Home Goods or Marshall's line for the longest time.
What you just described, I would rather walk out into my street and lick the asphalt than to have to go and do that
on a hot day too, not a cold one,
like at high noon, like July 20th. I'd rather,
because yeah. I mean I can't, if that's what someone wants to spend their day with instead of golfing when they're retired, I'm okay with that. It just makes it more of a hassle when I go in there every time. I'm an in and out type of shopper and they just want to stand and, well, I might want to put this back and get another one. And I'm like, okay, I'm gonna sniff every candle that's named something outrageous that somehow smells like what it says on the candle.
Yeah, it's some weird voodoo or science. Well, it's funny because like in the year or so we've talked, like, not to selfishly plug, but I have my first book that came out and it's about men and just doing a lot of studying and research on the psych. Well, no, I mean, I'm not trying to be a certain way. This isn't a misogynistic thing. It's just like, okay, differences. Like, you know, men are very missionally minded in that regard.
It's simple shit.
Right. You know, like you're saying, I need a backdrop. I want the most effective and cheapest pragmatic thing I could find. I don't care. You know, where, you know, women got to match the patterns and all this stuff. And it's like, guys just don't care. We're utilitarian in that regard.
So we're this episode's already going to piss off the people that hate me the most. And that happens to be feminists. I'm pro feminism. I don't give a shit about whatever, but I don't like the people that are like the ones that have the lampshade bang haircut that tell you because you have a dick, you have to suffer. I've had every encounter I've had has been that. And I'm like, I've met plenty of good ones that have been pretty nice, but they don't come off in the beginning saying I'm this. They just say, I'm a person. Let me talk to you. I like that. I'm not a complicated dude. I just want to talk to people, have these conversations and see where they go. But a book is fascinating because I can't write a book for shit.
Oh, dude. Just in the time that we've known each other and then all the guests and stuff and all the episodes I've listened to, there is no way that with the different kind of people that you've encountered and a different kind of knowledge and a different kind of situations that you've been put in, that you don't have this wealth of knowledge that you can't not share with people, that they're going to get some sort of benefit or some sort of enlightenment or knowledge or whatever that they didn't before. So I'm going to call shenanigans on that, just knowing you, what, how I do.
Would you call the value of information things that you accumulate from other people? Because that's the only knowledge source I've had. The way I equivalent it is like a parasite, like when the ones that live off like an animal's back that take the leeches off or whatever, like the ones that's like parasitism in a way. I've just got all my information from talking and being selfishly absorbing everything that someone spits out. So, I mean, I guess that's a form of knowledge, but I mean, a benefit's like writing a book, for instance, that's a different task in a half. That comes from your own processes and mind thinking. And I'm wondering, you said it on men. So I'm just curious, because that was going to already tighten up some sphincter muscles on some people that are listening. So I want to know, like, what's it like? Is it the basic mind track, the mindset, the mentality? What is it?
Sure. Well, I guess kind of circle back around and I'll answer your question. I've had actually just as many women buy my book than men. So, and I one of the things I say in my book that, and this isn't anything I invented, but I just thought it was applicable, that, you know, when the high tide comes in, all ships rise. And to me, the misnomer of, like, just randomly labeling somebody a ist or an ick or whatever, I think you're generalizing and you're painting with broad strokes things that you're, let me reword it this way. Like, I think you're handicapping yourself, because there is a great benefit from learning with people or learning from people that have a different point of view. Because I like to say, I don't hold the whole horizon in my view, right? Like, only the Almighty does. So we have a very limited perspective of what we can actually see. And that's our purview. But, you know, like meeting you or like meeting someone else that just has a different outlook on life, if we can be open-minded enough to say, this is a person who has intrinsic value and that have a point of view that in many ways might mirror mine, but in many ways it might differ from mine, I can take something from that and I can grow and I can be challenged. So that, like, one of the things I say in my book is, whatever isn't growing is dying. And you can take a look at, like, even like walk outside and you can see, like, where I live, I live in sort of a rural / suburban area, and there's a lot of nurseries and there's a lot of just forestation here, and you can see like a patch of really healthy trees that are flourishing, especially this time of year with the leaves and all that stuff. But then you can see trees and different shrubbery that they aren't, you know, they're in that process of shutting down. And I believe that that's a really good example that as humans, if we shut ourselves off to evolving, if you will, like spiritually, intellectually, it just, even with maturity, we get into this state of arrested development, which I don't think benefits me. It surely, like, as like a friend or, you know, someone that's involved in this world, it doesn't benefit you and vice versa. Because so when I say that the high tide makes all ships rise, you know, like, me becoming who I was destined or created to be, you becoming who you were destined and created to be, just in our relationship, elevates me, and it should elevate you. So if we can take that across the board, right? No matter if you're a different political affiliation, if you have a different religious affiliation, you know, whatever, I don't know, you're a Coke guy, I'm a Pepsi guy, whatever the case may be, there's benefits from differences that I think a lot of times, especially in mainstream media and pop culture right at this moment, we want, there's a narrative that says we're different, so we have to highlight on those differences and keep us separated, when I would argue it's our differences that may actually, we investigate and we take the time to understand and communicate, may actually bring the greatest sense of unity.
Okay. I agree with you probably 100% on everything of that. I don't think I have anything I disagree on. I think through all the conversations I've had, the easiest thing to do is to build up off similarities. Differences, the perspective that I'm going to bring in is the differences side of things. This society is kind of...
Is it okay if I drink coffee? I'm sorry, I don't want
to... Yeah, you're good, dude. I'm probably going to end up having a sip or two of my Coke or something.
Okay, I didn't know the protocol, so I'm sorry. Okay, go ahead. Good. Sorry. Cheers.
But with... differences, for instance, society has told us to capitalize on our differences because the differences are what's going to make your advantage to succeed, which in a way is somewhat true, depending on if you're a sports athlete or whatever area you want to program it into. But the era of labeling has been a way to be able to define something and put it into a category. So you want to surround yourself with like-minded individuals. I would say the main probably issue in the world and society and governments, whatever you want to call it, is probably the issue that they don't bring another perspective into the table that's disagreeing with what the people are saying. If me and you sit here and talk about how Coke is amazing, who's the guy that's saying Pepsi is the best and Coke is actually pretty bad? I want to know what that guy thinks, because they're going to think differently. Luckily, I'm not invested into anything things so much that I would ever disagree wholeheartedly. I think the only debate I've ever gotten into was around the time you were on. I had a guy say that kids shouldn't get free lunch at school. It just shouldn't be a thing. And then a later after, like, cause I was a kid that struggled and had to get free lunch as a kid too. And I ended up like stopping myself and thinking, you're a teacher. Why would you say this? And then he said, well, I teach a private school. And I'm like, you're thinking from a private school teacher's background where kids pay 50 something thousand dollars to do that. It's kind of, I had to stop in the moment to kind of realize the debate is being two conflicted perspectives. I mean, it happens throughout this show. People are going to say something they might not necessarily agree with. It doesn't have to boil down to an argument. It's a thought sharing experience. You're on this earth for one specific reason. People can say it's to breed. People can say it's to do whatever. Really, it's to gather knowledge as well. That is the biggest journey we experience. And it's a combination of what makes us as a person. From when you are born, you are constantly adding ones and zeros to your genetic code all the way until you finally die. And your energy goes wherever, if you believe in a heaven, if you believe in whatever. I'm not spiritualist, but I can understand the perspective of why people are. You don't want to know that there's no ending. We don't know. Nobody knows. I think you might recede into the earth as energy and become part of this world. The issue is my whole point of conversation. You learn more from talking with someone that might have a different view than you or this without argumentative. The problem is we shut down. Because if something doesn't agree with what we want to agree with, we want to shut it down, find our group that agrees with us and stick within that group. And this is why I say social media is a cult. You ready? It's all about the fucking followers. Everything is follower this, follower that, because you want people to agree with you. You want people to hear what you're saying. You want to feel like a prophet in a way. But here's the crazy thing is, then if there's the same group, let's say there's a bunch of let's bring a cult into an example. Let's bring like a religious community, for instance. They have the church. Everyone worships the church, follows the church on Instagram, follows the church on Twitter. Then one person goes, I don't like what this guy's saying. I'm going to do the same church, but I'm going to have this thing. You're going to have a bunch of people that are going to follow you. Then all these branches and vines start coming down and going to different routes. Then you got the same exact descriptive thing, but just with a slight niche different. Instead of no eating meat on a Thursday, that's everyone wants a cult. That's all it is. And I'm like, look, I get it, because having people that agree with you is fun. If we sit here and joke around and have the same thoughts, it's going to be awesome. But where's the engagement? It's supposed to be an intellectual chess match. Not that there's a winner and a loser, but afterwards you have a beer, you shake fucking hands, and you understand that you just had a really engaging conversation that made you think.
Right. No, I agree with you. And it seems like, kind of maybe in a minute, go back to the book, but I like what you're saying. The whole idea right now of intersectionality, it seems like the marginalized group or whatever, that's the predominant voice and everything else is discounted. I think personally it's shallow because like you were two white guys, which is a majority in one regard of one thing, but that doesn't negate who you are as a person. And, you know, you bring up the idea of social media. One of the things like my book has told me, because the reality of it is like I'm a self-published author on the east side of Cleveland, Ohio. I am probably not going to get to that point in my life where I'm like on the New York Times bestseller list. And I know that. But for me, what's been the most miraculous thing is I've been able to put together some sort of knowledge or some collection of thoughts or whatever you want to call it. And what I'm hearing back from people, honestly, I don't even know. Like I got people from overseas and in England and other places in Europe messaging me like things you said in this book touch me and help me to think. And I don't know that person. I'll probably never meet that person. But what you're talking about, the idea of exchanging knowledge and exchanging thoughts in an environment where it's okay to disagree if that happens, right? See, now it's like, well, you and I disagree on this, so you're Hitler. And I
that's how it is.
I'm not trying to be hyperbolic or anything, but that's what it is.
That's what it gets. That's been an literal examples though, is the thing is that someone actually jumps to that. I said for a while in an episode, some person said it wasn't true and it's all came true from the episode. I'll have to send it to you later. But I was like, people say outrageous shit all the time. And they said, no, nobody says anything without knowledge or information on something. I said, I'll pull up 100 tweets right now saying somebody says that if you drink Pepsi, you're racist. And he goes, that's not true. I sat there on the show and read the fucking tweets to him. And then 2 weeks later, Coke put out an article saying how to be less white. Everybody wants to, everybody will label you as something because that's how we label things now. We just want to define things. It's good with science, but it's not good when it comes to human interaction and people. The thing is, here's a really good example. If you're a starving person right now, let's say you haven't eaten in 24 hours, you haven't eaten in 32 hours. If I offer you, here's a snap pea as food, or if I offer you a nice steak, what do you want?
Well, I want the steak.
Okay. So now let's take that example and just transfer it over to something like social media. What's better? The snap pea, which is going to be a small number of people that read your book and feel something from it and really take a hold of that, or I give you a wide branch of audience members that are might agree and might not disagree. It's going to be cool because you want the most appealing thing to your eyes, and that's the big target, but no one thinks about the long payoff. That long payoff of that one thing causing a chain reaction leading to someone else, to someone else, to someone else. It's tasking.
Well, you bring up a really interesting point, and it seems like in the last year and a half, through everything that's happened, I don't know if this is by design. I don't know if it's just something that happened because of everything, or if this was a natural step in the evolution of our society. There's been a lot of division, but there's been a lot of separation, which they're two different things. You can be divided and together, but then you can be completely separate, but still have like minds, right? So let me give you an example. There's this thing that humans are communal creatures, and meaning like no man is an island, and I believe that. Now I'm not saying like, you know, I live alone and I like that. I like that, you know, my dog and I, we can do what we want, when we want, wherever we want, right? But the reality of it is I have a close-knit people in my life that I need. And they do challenge me. They do have different perspectives. They do have different thoughts. And that's what allows me to step back and say, wait a second. This is my thought on this, but I'm not 100% right all the time. And that's the idea of humility, right? Like that's one of those virtues that whatever system of faith you prescribe to or whatever moral doctrine that you try to adhere to, humility is a prized virtue. Being able to just say, I believe it was Socrates or Plato who said, I know that I know not. Like I've really been into Stoic philosophers
lately. Well, to truly admit that you know everything is admitting that you know nothing.
Right. And that's the thing. Like the older I get, literally, I realize I literally don't know anything. Like I have an idea about a couple things, you know, but
that's how I am. I'll be the first one to say, I say what's on my mind. I say my thoughts and stuff that I've accumulated, but I don't believe there's a definitive answer to anything. I don't believe water's water. I think H2O, what an alien comes down here. What do they say? H2O is something completely different. There's, you don't know everyone's
perspective.
Yeah. It's whatever knowledge we've gained. I mean, you talk about, self-isolation being different from division. That's 100% true. I have talked to plenty of people, at least a couple of people for sure. But at the same time, I don't message people. Like I'm not best friends with every single guest. I'm not. You can message me. I will be an ear for you. And this is to you too, man. If you want to message me, message me. I will get back to it. I will respond to you. I won't just ignore you and shut you out like a horrible person. No, I will not do that. But I also keep to myself because everyone has their own shit going on. And that's the issue, is that it becomes self-isolation. It's supposed to be an energy exchange. A conversation is an energy exchange. You're supposed to exchange your thoughts with a friend. This is all a factor of social media. And it's sadly going to be the new age the kids are going to grow up in. Communication is going to be through a Zoom call. It's going to be through social media. It's not in meeting in person anymore. And it's a different effect. If me and you were sitting in a room having a beer, we would have a different energy that's giving off, a different effect in our conversation, but it's reduced to a Zoom call.
Right. No, you're absolutely right. And you know, there was an article, I don't know if I should go here or not. There was an article in the Wall Street Journal on their Sunday edition about 2-3 months ago. And it, the title of the article was Welcome to the End of Humanity. And it talks about the rise of transhumanism, which the pervasive thought is you're able to upload your consciousness into some sort of an AI mechanism or AI facility, and then that in that, sorry, people are bugging me. But in that, your essence becomes alive digitally, whereas your body and your facilities and your wherewithal disappears, and theoretically you live on for eternity. That
immortality.
Right. And I mean, just my spiritual discipline, I don't believe that. But also it kind of makes me think of every single science fiction movie like I've ever seen, like, you know, be it The Matrix or even Johnny Depp did a movie.
Transcendence.
Thank you. Yes. A couple years back about that same thing. I think what's really unique, and I think what we need to come back to, and even with the idea of my book, so it's called Smith's, that's my last name, Smith's Heart of Man Repair Manual. My intention of writing a book wasn't to exclude one group or this. My intention in writing this book was that if there's anything I know or any experience I've gathered or any life lesson I've learned, I would just like to share it, that if somebody can get something out of it, not only do I receive a reward, just some sort of gratification personally, but hopefully there's an impact that that person will have that they can transfer to the next person and so on and so forth. I've had several guys, two I don't really even know, but reach out to me and say, hey, thank you for reading this book or for writing this book. I'm making this mandatory reading for my younger sons. And it was, I've had, like I said, I have several men say that to me. And it's very humbling because, you know, like you were asking me about like my books and all my stuff. And this isn't even all the stuff I have. I have a whole nother room in my house with has shelves and shelves. And I read books and I have my favorite authors. But like the one thing that hit me was the idea to be able to impact generations of people in an effective and a positive manner, right? You can be a total dick while your time on this earth is here, but what is that going to do you? Like, what, you know, you're talking about the greater betterment of man or making this, like, I'll give you an example. My dog takes me on a walk every morning, like for 3 or 4 miles. And I always make a point to say hi to my neighbors. And I, you know, just at least wave, someone's driving or, you know, whatever. And it's not because, like you're saying, like, I'm not an overtly social person. I have my group and they're my people. And, you know, but I want to know that where I'm living, where I lay my head, I'm doing what I can do to try to spread some love and try to, you know, I don't know that me just saying hi to somebody is going to pick them up and say, hey, somebody actually does care. And that's one of the things I've been confronted with. You know, the last time we talked, I was in the middle of the darkest period of my life. And I get a little, a certain way talking about it. You know, my ex-wife left me, and I actually had wrote this book and finished it and found a professional editor to send it to, but she left the day before I was supposed to do it. So it literally sat for like 2.5 years. Cause I'm thinking, how can I write a book about, you know, trying to be a good guy and like, what are some good qualities and characteristics to hold on to help you in life? And I felt like a charlatan. I just felt like, who am I to say anything to anybody about anyone or anything because of my experience, just like self-discounting, self-doubting, self-loathing, and even, you know, self-hating, all that stuff. But, you know, what I started to realize, I have three of my best friends, Jason, Josh, and Tilson. And the whole time, this whole like almost 5 years, they're like, you have to get this out. You have to get this out. You have to do this. There's people that need to know your life and they need to know your experiences, that what you've gone through, they can overcome that too. They can overcome whatever experiences are in their life. And there was a movie when I was a kid, it was called The Edge, and Anthony Hopkins was in it and Alec Baldwin. And the one thing that Anthony Hopkins said to Alec Baldwin was like, what one man can do, so can another. I know there's nothing unique about me. I know there's really nothing unique about maybe the circumstances I've gone through, but what I know that is unique is my perspective and how, if I am able to somehow, and this is why I say, I know that there's within you that you have things to share with people, to encourage people, to uplift people, to give people hope. It may look different than how I would do it, but you have that. And anyone listening or watching this, they have that ability too. So through that time, through like the 2.5 year process of just letting it sit, my friends were like, you know, you're a good guy. Like you're going through shit and hardness and darkness and depression and anxiety. And like literally praying that because the pain was so real. And I'm not trying to conflate or overflate anything, but there were times like I would literally pray like, God, I don't want to be here anymore. And it's not like I'm suicidal or anything. It was just the pain is so real. And I'm being honest because I don't know if this will help anybody, but I would literally pray like, God, I want to be with you in heaven. And I don't want to be here because I don't know how to process this pain. I don't know how to go through this. I've never been here before. I don't know how to get healing. I don't know how to resolve anything in my life. And it seemed at the time like that was the best option.
It's that tunnel I've talked about a couple of times. It's very hard to see out to the end of the tunnel. I'm not in it right now, but I'm in it. I have severe depression, but I don't look like it just because, I mean, people that are usually in the most pain tend to hide it pretty fucking well.
Well, look at like Robin Williams.
Yeah. Well, he's probably my all time favorite person in the world when it comes to stand up comedy, but he also had Lewy body syndrome. And that's just like, I put up a tweet. I said, if you just watch any of his older stuff and know what he was going through with Lewy body and all that, it's a different effect in the comedy. Like, it's just like, oh shit, you're hiding so much sadness. You can kind of see it a little bit, but it's a concept of like, times are hard. I think my cousin put it into my head the most when I had this past year. I mean, like 7-8 people just gone. Just a couple took their own lives. A couple got into accidents. Lost someone, like a family member, and lost another family member. But the pain can make you stronger, but it hurts in the moment. You know, my biggest fear of a lot of things was like, there are times I'm like, I should drive the fucking tree into the car, like, or drive the car into the tree. You know, it's that type of thing. But my cousin said, is that weak? People say it's weak if you kill yourself. Or is it the strongest thing you could possibly do because you could not see a possible end, or you couldn't see anything where you didn't want the pain to go on any longer? Sometimes the strongest thing is really your perspective on it. There's things that go on in this world, and it's why I get so mad about mental health. For instance, I don't think you need a personal day. I don't think you need a me day, a time to relax if the world wasn't so fucking tough. But the world is very, very tough. It makes it impossible for you to survive because the industry doesn't care about you. They think of you as a number and they want your money. The biggest thing is people say, well, there should be more mental health things. I don't think so. I think there's plenty of them out there. The issue is the money. The government gave $850 billion to Blasio and his wife lost it. All $850 billion. That happens so much in the government. It's ridiculous where I don't any of this stuff. I don't even get mad at corporations anymore. I used to go off in tangents about corporations. I think they're all whatever, but it's all because nobody gave a shit about the people that were following after them. You think the McDonald's company, everyone considered them the four horsemen, the devil apocalypse, whatever you want to call it. They're just someone that only cares about the people that they know and the people that they love, and that's their family. It doesn't matter if it fucks up future generations. The issue is you're asking I'm even asking people to have empathy for others, which is very, very fucking hard to do when you look into the world and you see the darkness that looms in it. And that darkness, sadly, gets lumped into that ist or that ism or that whatever. It's all of that. You lump it into that because that's what you see. That's what they show you on the news. I think it's an easier way to keep people divided when the sole purpose is that we're supposed to unite together. I don't know what that would be. I talk about coronavirus. I've had near-death experiences before, just outside of before the virus. 2 weeks it lasts where you're loving life and you think everything's great. That the first 2 weeks of the pandemic was like that. And then everyone reverted back to their position because the way that society is set up, the way the industry is set up, is for you to go back into a peg spot and be miserable a lot of the times. They don't really want you to be a creative. They want you to make money and production value. Now, their perspective is we're a very small country, or we're a big country, but in a very small amount of time, we have succeeded and passed so many other countries that have been here for thousands of years. It's very, very weird. And people go, well, why is that? Well, we borrowed a lot of money and now we're in a hole in a way where they basically got us by the balls. Now, the way to fix that is everything that we've been doing production value wise, it's to make up so we can be more self-sustainable. But sadly, we have people that are elected, no matter if it's Biden, Trump, whoever the hell you want to say, it's just money's the issue. when money gets involved, corruption gets involved, and then you start lacking empathy for other people. If you ask me right now, would I donate $1,000 out of my pocket to a fund that's going to help benefit future generations? Why the fuck would I do that when I need $1,000 right now? I don't have money to give. That's the mindset of people. That's how I would think of it. It's very, very hard to look at the grand plan of everything when you can't even see out your fucking own window because there's too much shit going on in your own head.
No, there's like literally like a dozen things you just hit on there. I'm trying to like process, but I think maybe in keeping with what we're talking about, the perspective, you know, with being empathetic and literally trying to put yourself in someone else's shoes, I think that's where it starts. You know, like again, I can tell you, like, during those moments where I would have those thoughts, like, it's better if I'm not here than if I were be here. There would be moments like my dog would come up and like want me to pet her. Or, and I know that might sound like just a minute thing, but the idea of is hope. The idea is reaching my hand out to you that in your time of need, you grab it back. And it's not about being judged. It's not about being looked down upon. It's not about saying, oh, you know, big, there's no big me in life, right? We all go through difficult times that go beyond our understanding, go beyond our experiences. And even if you're talking about, like, I would even say the corporatization of government, and that's a whole nother thing. But all that aside, I think the reason that the experiment of the American government has been so successful throughout 245 years is we have a government that was created by, I really believe, really wise and studied men who had the government of, by, and for the people, meaning we are self-governed. We are allowed to, in this experiment, if I want to give you $1,000 or if I want to give that charity or whatever, like, I can do that. That is independent of myself and no one else because we do theoretically have the freedom to do that. But what if we just did that in and of ourselves, remove whatever governmental constraints, remove whatever morality system, remove whatever, and just say out of the goodness of my heart, and because at one point or another, I am going to be in a position where I need to receive that back. And I genuinely believe you reap what you sow.
That's the initial intent, is that I think when the Declaration of Independence was created, if you look at that thing, people say it needs to be amended. I think in some parts, yeah, sure, we need to adjust for a better time period. But they got a lot of shit that even thinking back then that they predicted a lot of shit was going to happen that has ended up happening now.
Well, it's funny because I literally, in my office where I'm at, right here, I have a big copy framed of the Declaration of Independence. I find one glaring fault in the document of the Bill of Rights, and that's no term limits. there's a quote that says, politicians like diapers need to be changed often. And I find that to be a glaring fault. Like, why do we have people that have been leading governmental systems and governmental programs longer than you and I have been alive?
Well, why is power so corrupting? That's the thing. If I give you power,
absolute power corrupts absolutely. Yeah. You know? Well, Plato even said lack of participation, and this is where kind of you get in the diametrically opposed position that we're talking about, like with the admiration of the Declaration of Independence. Plato said that refusal to participate in government means you are governed by your inferiors. And once again, I'm not a partisan. I just want to be free. Like, I want to be free to make my own decisions. And I respect you or whomever that same thing. Like, whatever. I only have a couple hard lines with things. You know, like, I don't like pedophilia. I'm not a big fan of abortion.
Not an Epstein
fan. But outside of that, if you're not hurting me, if you're not hurting, you know, like, if someone wants to, I don't know, right? If you aren't maliciously hurting people and you're minding your own business and you're just, you know, you're being a good person, you're contributing to society in whatever way you can, then just leave people alone. And I don't know how or why we're at this point now where, well, you have to do this. It's like these people that were like in my high school, we had like hall monitors. You know, it's like they're on this little power trip because they were dorks in school or whatever. I don't know what the word to say is, but it's right. Like this power trip, you know, it's like, leave me alone. I'm going to leave you alone. I'm going to respect you enough to make your decisions in your life and your family the best way I know that you know how to. All I ask in return is forward me that same opportunity.
Yeah, that's probably how I am. You treat me the way I want to be treated. I'm going to treat you like an average. I don't like my supervisors. They don't talk down to me. They talk to me like I'm on the same level, even though they can fire me at any moment. They just know I don't respond to the whole negativity thing. I don't respond to the whole telling me what to do. You ask me what to do and I will do it for you 100%. The basic principle kind of is there's two types of people in the world. There's people that want to be left the fuck alone and there's people that won't leave them the fuck alone. It's 100% true because sadly, when it comes down to Karens, when it comes down to whatever it is, everyone's got their own perspective. I can see why Karen would be so upset, but it's also a power control thing as well too. See, power is this weird little bastard of a demon, I would say.
It's an alluring, intoxicating drug.
Yeah, I mean, 100% of it is. It's just when you have it, it might not start off with bad intentions, but it always gets riddled down the line with it. I mean, you want to start making people do things. And then when they stop doing things you want them to do, you want them to leave or you want them to be gone somewhere. It's interesting because as much as I can say that, you know, America has its faults, I always say it also is doing pretty fucking well for a couple hundred years old. I mean, it's top notch and top batting and stuff. But the issue is, it's the foundation has been run by people that shouldn't be running the whole foundation. And that's a factor of power. Term limits, for instance, are the best example of what needs to be added in there when it comes to certain positions. You have power past 2 years, past a year, past whatever, it starts going to your fucking head where people start to feel the need to do this type of thing. And I think with the pandemic, when they put everyone on lockdown was my biggest issue. You're not as free as you think you are. And that was the biggest thing is when they even admitted that the Bill of Rights was thrown out the fucking window when it came to the pandemic. It was disguised as 2 weeks in your home. Then you were getting fined if you left even a month in my town. It was a $5,000 fine if you were caught outside without a work permit to be able to go to work. And it's like, hang on a fucking second. I pay bills. I do this type of stuff. Why are you controlling me? And you start to realize it's like this government control type thing. And then people pushed back. This is my biggest thing is if you have a problem with the government, if you have this type of thing, they're scared of two things. Religion, not as bad as it was a year ago. Last time we talked, I think religion was still pretty like up there. I talked to a rabbi and I told him the two things to be afraid of was if you were the government was religion and people. And he goes, why do you say religion? I was like, but that one's being shaky ground because they're tearing up churches and they're destroying them and they're building something else over there. And he goes, I don't believe that. Nobody messes with the church. Not 2 weeks later, Vatican priests were arrested. 13 of them were. That was around the time that happened. And I sent him that article. He blocked me. I don't care, but I'm saying this is what it gets to. It gets to a point where you start to realize when the people come together, it's unstoppable. When you have a nation of people come together against something, you start to realize it can't be controlled.
Why do you think they started closing restaurants and bars like where I live at like 8 o'clock? I'll give you an example. The Green Dragon Tavern, who was owned by Samuel Adams.
That's a great name.
John Adams, he was the first vice president, the second president. The Sons of Liberty, they would gather at Samuel Adams Tavern to organize and to plot and to share news. There's this, like, and we keep talking about this, like a theme, I guess, like the synergy of people coming together. What I can tell you in regards to religion or spirituality is this, is that I believe the First Amendment is there for a reason. And when that begins to be deteriorated and violated, we have the second. Now, I'm not advocating violence. I believe in the supremacy of knowledge, and I believe in the supremacy of being guided by the Almighty in decisions that you make. That and I tell this to people, especially on our podcast, if things get violent, we lose, right? Like, you know, you can look at any kind of civil rights, any kind of conflict, anything, whether it be in America or globally. When things go kinetic, there's always a downward spiral, and it goes very rapidly, very, very quickly.
Is that a beeper?
I think right now, what's that?
Is that a beeper?
My phone is being.
I'm about to say, is that a beeper? Today. What are you, a drug dealer? Jesus, who has a beeper?
Yeah, man, anymore? I got people blowing on my pager. But
got the meth.
That's right. I could be a doctor, but
true. Doctors and drug dealers. Oh my.
Well, God. It's funny on my book. Actually, I show you the cover. I designed it. Like, I have a heart, someone's like, "Are you a doctor?" I'm like, "No, I
shut up one more time." That's a good book.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. So this is it. Not the plug, but I wanted to email you a copy of the e-book, but yeah, it's on like Amazon or whatever. I'd be humbled if someone buy it, but it's been doing really well. I'm very impressed and surprised with it. But
I have a couple listeners that bought a past guest who spoke to ghosts on my show, so I think you might get a couple sales there.
I'd appreciate it. They want me to sign it. I'd even do that for them. But the larger point to what I'm saying is that I believe that, like, what you're talking about, and this is why this is important to me. Being in college, I was an English major, I was a journalism major, communications. If you can control the narrative through language, you control everything. Let me give you two examples, okay? Lockdown. The term lockdown was created in the California penal system in the 70s, that when there were riots or when prisoners got out of control, they would lock them down in their cells until all the dust and everything clears, because that's how you keep people controlled. You only lock down prisoners. You don't lock down free men and free women. Quarantine, the second example. By definition, you only quarantine people who are sick or people who have infirmities. You don't quarantine people who are whole and people who are healthy. What I'm trying to say is that it's important, you know, and you asked to circle back about knowledge and gaining experience and stuff. I have a whole chapter in here about wisdom. And there's a difference between wisdom and knowledge and logic and experience, but they all combine together. That's what that is. It equals wisdom, right? My perspective tells me, like you're saying, when you only lock down people that are, by definition, like prisoners or incarcerated, when you only quarantine people who are sick, and you see the exact opposite happen. You have free men and women being locked down for what crime? There was no crime committed by the individual, right? Then you have people who are being forced to quarantine when you only quarantine people who are sick, and you have people who are whole. There's this displacement of reality, if I can say that with all due respect, and I'm not trying to be contradictory. I'm not trying to necessarily poke the bear. What I'm trying to do is I want to give people some information is to think about, right? The older I get, the more I value my freedom. The older I get, the more I value my liberty, meaning I want to live my life. I want to be as loving and peaceful, as generous as I can to whomever, right? And at some point, we have to realize we're going along our daily lives. I'll word it this way. When tyranny encroaches upon us, we can acquiesce and we can succumb to it, or like our founding fathers did, and how they established in the documentation of the founding of our country, we can say, wait a second, no. And there's so much power in just saying no. And you know as well as I do, because we've talked, with everything that's happened with the coronavirus, anyone who has a dissenting opinion is deplatformed, removed, blocked, in whatever. So it's circling back around to our conversation where if you have a difference of opinion, that's great. Okay, let's just sit and talk about it, because maybe there's something I can learn from you. Maybe there's something you can learn from me. Only authoritarian regimes completely defang people with opposing opinions and opposing statements, if you will. And it makes me think. And that was one of the predominant things through all of the last year and a half. If there's no truth or there's no threat to someone sharing an opinion that might differ from what the mainstream opinion is, why not let that person speak?
Well, it's my biggest thing I've been ranting about for a long time is the Chinese government, for instance. We're copying that model. That's what our government wants to be, is an authoritarian type system. But it's not going to work because, sadly, most of it still our power is still in our hands. There's only a matter of time until we eventually copy that model and it starts working. But the way they do it is the sales pitch. The difference between the word lockdown and the word quarantine It's the same shit, but one has a noble purpose to it. If you're quarantining, you're seen as a good person protecting others because you don't want to get anybody else sick in your family. You want to protect grandma. But lockdown comes in a way of, now you're taking away my freedoms. You're taking away my rights and ability to do something. Look, when it comes down.
Yeah, but what kind of maniacal asshole wants to say, I purposely want to get people sick?
Nobody wants to get anybody sick. That's the thing. And that's what they capitalize on. You got to understand, the government doesn't give a fuck about you as a person. We've just somehow got it construed into our heads that they're caring individuals. Here's the thing. The government's not the issue. Government is red, white, and blue. Okay. That's the government is amazing. It's the people that are running the shit. They're in a fucking hole. They have things that we don't know about. They won't let us know. They won't do all this stuff. I just tell people, and people go like, the government wouldn't do something like that. The government, Operation Midnight Climax, they were drugging people to do horrible acts. It leads into Charles Manson shit.
The experiment, Bayer under the
Project Aversion, there's so
Operation
many.
Operation Mockingbird, even Operation Paperclip with the Joseph Mengele and the SS, which the Americans eventually adapted, and now
Wernher von Braun in our space program. Yeah. Okay. To skip over that. But what I tell people is, if you just look at history, you start to realize that the issue is that they just want a bunch of worker bees doing something. And people go, there's no way. And I'm like, that's how the system works. The issue is when, like with censorship, I got mad at censorship for a long time because now they just started letting in the lab idea. You can now talk about it. You can now do all these things without censors ripping it out and blocking it or doing whatever. We put too much faith in these companies now. And when I say the Constitution thing needs to be amended, is that you need to put a clause in there now that all these giant corporations, when they have this much power, because nobody predicted social media back then, that they need to have a type of thing where if they're going to be these giant labels of information and sources now, the internet, you cannot restrict the flow of knowledge. That doesn't make sense. You want people to learn. You want people to understand and sort through themselves. The reason why they haven't Epsteined or done a type of thing to Alex Jones is because they've labeled him as a conspiracy nut to the whole world, when that man's gotten more right than he's got wrong. He had the giant Sandy Hook thing, but everything he said, a monkey growing human organs, NPR just released information about us starting to grow in a cells of a monkey. We're starting to grow human organs. We're able to do that now. I'm like, it's you got to understand, is it's not the like John Stewart went on the show and started calling out science and all that.
Colbert.
Science is not bad, but it's just the way that people want to keep pushing the boundary of when it starts to become like inserting yourself into technology, like we were talking about before, expanding life. Okay, but what's the downside of that? How long until you have to keep paying a nominal fee to stay in the system where they can unplug you at any moment? You start to realize there's other things that come with it. It starts off with laudable goals, but no one sees the end goal. I had a biomechanical engineer on here who was telling me about putting on robotic parts and getting to where you can infuse yourself with robotic parts and stuff like that. And I was like, okay, so it's good that we can give a person who doesn't have legs the ability to walk, right? And she goes, it's amazing. I said, yes, yeah, 100% it is. But you know, there's going to be some asshole out there that wants to blow his legs off to be able to have robotic legs because they're better than the normal ones he has. That's what you got to think, is you need that other person going, hey, like during Operation 119, when some dick wanted to launch a nuke at the moon. Then some guy in the room just goes, hey, if we launch a nuke at the moon, it's going to mess up all research of our space. And he goes, oh, I didn't think of that. No shit. Have people in the room that don't agree with you that have another point. That's the whole point of this thing, is conversation. It leads to more understanding, more knowledge, and energy exchange is also a resource exchange.
Right. Well, it also in that it comes down to accountability. And what's going to have a chapter in my book about it. There's a great sense of security and accountability, because let's just say, for instance, like, hey, you know, you have these, and I'm paraphrasing, so if this isn't the proper terminology, forgive me, but you have bionic legs. And with these bionic legs, you can walk faster or jump
higher.
Right. And you're thinking, oh man, yeah, I'm going to get in some kind of accident and have my natural leg severed so I can have these bionic legs.
I'm going to kick a 100 yard field goal.
Right. But the accountability portion of that is, and this is where I liken it to actually my book. Like you, any song that's ever meant anything to you, you look at a 3.5 minute pop song and you're like, yeah, this is cool, it's catchy. But you don't look at the years, or you don't consider the experiences that somebody had to go through to write that song.
The Cranberries are the best example. They don't get a lot of credit, but when that lady does the song Zombie and she hits that thing where she makes that vocal crack at the end of it, that's talent. That's nobody even thought to infuse that into a song.
Well, even on a lyrical, like, you know, you like a guy I love is like Warren Zevon. He's one of my favorite songwriters, you know, and you look at like a guy like that and what he wrote, you don't, Bruce Springsteen, that's another guy, you know, although politically has some issues with him, but I don't know why he hates America, but nonetheless, like, you know, you listen to Thunder Road, and that's one of the best songs ever written. Thunder Road is, you know, the screen door slams, Mary's dress waves like a vision, she dances across the porch as the radio plays. I mean, it's damn near Shakespearean, right? But the larger point is, when you think about accountability, you also introduce the idea of consequences, right? I can do whatever I want, but that might not be beneficial to me. It goes, again, only seeing my part of the horizon, not seeing a holistic view of it. So where you might think, yeah, I want these bionic legs so I can, you know, join whatever football team and kick 100-yard field goals, right? But you don't realize, like, hey, listen, you may not be compatible. Like, your body chemistry and structure may not actually take to this. Or there might be years and years and years of surgeries that you have to go through. Or I had a kidney transplant. I had the initial surgery. It didn't work well. I had to go back for another surgery. And then I was admitted to a hospital a third time, like a week after, because there was complications, right? It's the idea of being accountable and just thinking, like, what if? Like, what? Yeah, in theory, having bionic legs sounds pretty cool. But in reality, the pragmatic day in, day out thing, how is that going to work? How is that going to work with whatever?
Well, I'm not of the group that agrees with the bionic legs. I kind of am against that. I'm also against the Neuralink, too, because I've talked to plenty of psychics and I've had own experiences myself that I can't really explain when it comes to like seeing shit and then it actually happening. Mostly, I think that human has another stage of evolution in a way, like we were talking about in the beginning. I'm 100% belief of that. And I think technology is forcing the evolution. And sadly, there's going to be complications when it comes to rushing something.
I don't know if it's forcing. I think it's convoluting and confusing. And what I mean by this is that I personally believe we're mind, body, spirit. And a lot of, like, you know, being a Christian or someone that believes in the writings and the life of Christ, I can look at that and I get a great sense of comfort, and not all of my questions are answered, but it leads me in that direction, right? And what I can say is this, I've had supernatural experiences too. I believe that we live on a natural plane, but there's a supernatural realm that we seldomly have access to. And like with the idea of Neuralink, is that going to stop us from being able to commune with the Almighty? Is that going to stop us from being able to control our own thoughts? Are we then, like, literally, are we going to be like Neo in the Matrix, jacked up to this thing that is controlling our perspective of everything? And in that regard, to me, it goes back to, I just want to be left alone and have my freedom, because I don't know that that has freedom for me. I don't know that I'm going to be programmed to do whatever. And, you know, to get back into the conspiracy theory thing, like, you know, you talk about like the MK Ultra. Like, you know, our government, we're doing these mind expanding and mind altering experiment on people. And I like things like the Manchurian Candidate and like Sirhan, who killed Robert Kennedy Jr. He claimed to have been part of that. And
you can't gloss over that one. Hang on a second. Robert Kennedy Jr.
Or I'm sorry. No, RFK. Sorry. Not Robert Kennedy Jr. Yeah. RFK. John F. Kennedy's brother. Rob. Sorry. I misspoke. But there's like a thing. And I, once again, mind, body, and spirit, it's the trifecta of a holistic person working. And any interruption in that, I believe, any interruption of that means that we're not being who we were created.
I think there was a process that we were supposed to get to, but we've long delayed it with the amount of technology we've infused into our life. And sadly, that's a lot. When you have more empathy, you can sense energies. When I tell you, like, you're standing in a room with someone and you can tell if someone just went through something, you go, are you okay? You realize, no, something has happened. I think people naturally have that when it comes to something as drastic as anger energy or something like that. You get the vibes that a person's not really
or
good,
like,
with
that's
you.
A good dude, or that's, you know, yeah, she's cool, or what? Yeah, yeah, I get
but,
it.
Sadly, we've used devices and technology. It's kind of isolated that one thing. And it's like, hey, it's either you're going, it's like an organ. You're going to use it or you're going to lose it. And sadly, that's with like gallbladder. We don't need that anymore. When one point it served a purpose, that empathy thing, you don't need it anymore. It's kind of like coming in at last moments. Like, hey, are we still a thing or do you not need us anymore? Can we cut this out and make room for something else? And then technology is going to replace that. I don't think it should. I think we should all learn to naturally adapt and develop that ability. It's why people study meditation so much, as they believe there's another form, because there is another sense. Our brain probably unlocks more than what we have the capabilities of understanding now. 50 years from now, we'll unlock more. It's just the issue is, people want what's easy. And if you tell them a device is going to be able to do it for themselves, they're going to want to do that instead of go through the long process of trying to develop it. And sadly, I just consider it, it's like social media. I mean, it's just like devices like this. It's not the same effect if I'm sitting in a room with you talking. It's a different, it gives you the benefit. It's what conversation is going to eventually turn into 100 years from now. Kids are going to be texting. It's all going to be a new form of communication. Our words through having conversations in school are probably going to get reverted to another social media platform. And then it's going to be the same effect, but it's very, very diminished in the actual feeling it is. When you come home after a long day and you talk to a personal friend that wants to hear how your day went, you tell them everything was horrible and that all this is happening in your life. And they go, it's okay. It's going to get better. That feels so much better than some person just sending you a message and you reading it. It's so, and the only good part I think about reading a message is that sometimes, like, I had a buddy, past guest a couple of times, named Jason Lampro. He sent me a GIF and he's like, I read this in your ranting voice. And that I was like, I'm glad that, like, you're reading shit, because he's listened every single episode since 400 something. So he knows me pretty well. So he's like, everything, you're just in my head constantly, your voice, every time I'm like, and I just start ranting just like how you do. And I was like, see, that's the only benefit, is when you know someone so well, is that you can read it in their style or their voice or your favorite comedian or whoever this, but it's not the same as if they were saying it to you and you were experiencing it in that moment. And sadly, moments are going to end up being lost, and they're going to be reduced to a photo that's on your Facebook wall from 2005 when you went to Tahiti fucking golfing in the coast. I don't know, but it ends up getting to a point where you start to look at, like, what are we willing to lose? And what are we gaining? The return is not as big as you think it is. It's pretty small in the grand aspect of what we're losing.
The episode that's going to come out this Friday on our podcast, Flawcast, CLE, Flawcast, we call it, We're Not Descended of Fearful Men. And I almost verbatim lifted it from a new podcast I've been listening called Warrior Poet Society. And they had a recent episode called Why We Are the Weakest Generation. And it's kind of like what you're talking about, and how I started to look at it is, instead of evolving, it's a de-evolution. And what I mean by this is, you know, think of like the Middle Ages, the 14, 15, 1600s, and think of like the most lavish, decadent, you know, a powerful person in the world, like maybe like the King of England at the time, okay? Like, this is the most powerful person in the world, living in the absolute lack of luxury, but this person couldn't go to their fridge and get ice. They couldn't get in a car and drive on relatively safe roads at 70 miles an hour and get to one place and then come back relatively easy. They didn't have running water that you could take a shower or go to the bathroom inside. There's this I'm grateful. I don't want to have to go out and take a dump, but there's this idea of being weakened and being conditioned to be weakened through technology. And it's a matter, I think, of balance, right? Like right now, I think this is a great use of technology. You're where you're at, I'm where I'm at, but like we're conversing, we are connecting on whatever level this is. And hopefully anyone who hears this, they'll be able to connect with us in that regard too. However, if you also look at the fact that there's a coffee shop right down the street from my house I normally go to, and I'll do some studying and research there. And I just, the other day I was waiting for my coffee and there was like four or five people that had to wait because they're busy and every single one of them are on their phone and this and that and the other. And I just started looking, I'm like, and this isn't a judgment thing. I just thought, what have we become that we can't wait like a minute or two to get a cup of coffee and, you know, like a muffin or something
without, we haven't hit immortality yet. Time needs to be savored.
Well, and that's the one thing I gained and really in a quantified way to appreciate through the lockdown, the idea of the community, like when the quote unquote lockdown, when you're forced to be separate, it should give us a greater appreciation for those moments that we come together. And like you say, like we break bread or we get to grab a beer or grab a burger or whatever, and we're interacting with one another. We're building that bond. I believe this is, if I had any kind of cautionary thing to say to people, it's to hold on to our humanity. One of the things I've been talking a lot to people is when I was going through that dark time I mentioned a little bit ago when my ex-wife left me, I read the New Testament, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, and then the book of Acts over and over and over and over again, literally for about 2.5-3 years. Those were the only things in regards to spirituality I read. And I'll tell you why. And this is my opinion. And people can say whatever, but I'm just sharing my opinion. I think that modern church, like maybe the Christian church or however you want to word it, has done a huge disservice to people in losing and separating the humanity of Christ from the, you know, the divinity, and though he is divine, there's that human quality, meaning that, you know, the Bible says we have a Savior that we can associate with because he's gone through the same things we have, right? Like if, you know, like recently hearing your uncle pass, and I can empathize that because I've been there and done that, right? The idea of if we look at Christ as a man, who he was fully God, he was fully man, we start to realize we actually have somebody that can empathize. And I'll tell you, for me, and not to get too weird if I can, but in the book of Luke chapter 7, there was this woman who, she was a widow and her son died. And if you understand anything of the customs of that day, a woman losing her husband and then losing her son, she had no means to take care of herself. Because that's just how that custom was. The husband would provide for the family and then the husband passes, her son then takes that responsibility. And she's like, she has no one, she has nothing. That's all she has. And there's a story where Christ, Nain is the name of the town. He comes into the town in Nain and he sees her great despair. He sees her at her depth, her lowest, her most confused, her most hurt, her most vulnerable. And the Bible says, being moved with compassion for her. There's an emotionality and there's that human aspect in regards to Christ, who he is, who he was, that allows him to say, this is a person that needs genuine help, that needs connection, that needs something that she is unable to process or grasp or achieve at this moment. And being moved out of compassion, the miracle that happened was he brought her son back to life. So he brought her wholeness. He reestablished her. And what I can tell you is through that process in my life anyway, I'm now in a position where I'm coming out of it, that darkness, that despair, that I'm hopefully starting to see a light at the end of the tunnel. I just hope it's not a train. But my larger point is technology is great, right? If we use it properly, if we have a proper balance. But what I feel and what I fear is that as we lose our humanity to these technological advances, as we lose our humanity to societal norms and society placing these, you know, we have to look at this way, this person this way, because they look like this or because they belong to this group. As we remove our humanity from humanity, the danger is that we are literally like sands through an hourglass, effectively losing ourselves. And where is humanity going to go at that point? Which I don't know. I don't have a question or an answer for that, but I think about that a lot. And that's why I think it's so important, like what you're doing, connecting people with people. I think it's important that, yeah, we go out and we hang out with our friends. We, you know, like those people that are there for us and that we're there for them. That is that bond that ties us together that we need to foster. We need to pour into, we need to continue to build upon and challenge that and be challenged by that and grow as a person, evolve as a person. You know, so when you asked me earlier why I wrote a book about men, honestly, I don't even look at it as a book about men. I look at it as a book about man, like mankind, and how we all collectively need one another. And that if we can improve in just one area, the theory is, in my mind, in my heart, that we could all begin to improve. You know, you can't make a difference globally until you make a difference in your own house. You know, Jordan Peterson has this theory about cleaning your own room, right? You can't clean up the entire world if you can't even clean up your own room. And that's where that is. That's where that building that humanity, learning those hard lessons, learning from those hard lessons, and then taking it and trying to benefit others. And I have friends that have been in rehab for years. I have friends that, you know, struggle with mental illness. And through this whole process of this last year and a half, there's been such a huge regression. Suicides have skyrocketed. I have friends who are police. The domestic abuse, spousal abuse, children abuse have skyrocketed. I don't personally ever think we're going to know the true numbers of those. Drug abuse, overdose, suicides, all these side effects are on the increase. And my hope is that reconnecting with one another on a humanistic level, on a loving and a caring level, that we could begin to, what was meant to divide and meant to destroy, that we can actually kind of come back together and reunite and build one another up. So that as time, you know, we're being funneled into this time in history, that we can reject whatever narrative. Like, I'm not going to look at you a certain way because, you know, Fox or CNN tells me to look at you that way. It's the idea of what Martin Luther King Jr. said, that one day he wants to live in a country that will judge people on the character of their heart, not the color of their skin, or not their sexual leaning, or not their natural proclivities, or not whatever group they belong to, or whatever spiritual leaning that they...
Do you know what happens when you say things like that?
You get in trouble.
The government fucking killed them.
Yeah, but you know what? That's the misnomer. And I'll say something else really deep. I don't believe, you know, we talked about, you shared your opinion on death and stuff, and that's, I appreciate that. And I want to learn from that and take that in. I don't believe death is a period. I believe death is a comma, right? If all of my heroes, all the people in history I've looked up to, they've all paid a price for whatever they did.
Yeah.
But when you talk about legacy, when you talk about an eternal impact in the lives of humans, you know, it's like what Obi-Wan says to Darth Vader in the original Star Wars. If you strike me down now, I'll become more powerful than I have ever been, right? Like killing somebody like Martin Luther King Jr. or Malcolm X or John F. Kennedy or whomever, just to use a more recent example, their legacy and their mission and their purpose in life has echoed and reverbed through the halls of eternity and history, to whereas now, through their example, through their martyrdom, if you will, if we choose to, and I believe the choice is easy, it's not simple, but it's easy, we can walk in those their steps and try to fulfill their message and just at a pragmatic, realistic level.
100%. I think it fuels even more of the cause, but at the same time, it's hard to keep those people in line to keep going for the cause when it's so easily able to distract our attention. That's the biggest issue, is people want to focus on fixing mental health. Okay, well, you're not focusing on the core principles of things. People start up riots and then they don't go to the first dangle of keys or a little bit of hope or something giving lenience to you. You stop doing it. When everything opened back up and the government realized they had pushed their extent a little bit too far, where people were starting to be, fuck your rules, I'm going to go out and start my business, I don't give a shit anymore. Then we stopped when they were like, okay, go out and do it. Go out and do it. Yeah, you're open. We're open back up again. People are like, that's right. But then they were like, yeah, because we told you to. And they're slowly trying to manipulate you to make it seem like that's part of their thing, is that they let you be out. And it's like, guys, at this point, you got to realize when it comes to control, like lockdowns happening again, not going to happen again. It's not.
It's going to be a lot more difficult.
It, it's you're going to have to dangle something really, really shiny in front of our eyes to be able to go back into that. And even some of us aren't going to do that. There's so I knew so many people, like my home gym that I went to for the longest time was like family. They lost their business because they got new owners. And the next thing you know, they couldn't supply our benefit for the pandemic package that was supposed to help out their business. So they went bankrupt. They had to sell the gym. I knew plenty of business owners that killed themselves during the pandemic because they lost their fucking lives work. It's not like it's a serious topic when it comes to the aspect of how free are you? And you start to realize like they will do anything to take that freedom away from you. But sadly, we built a country that's based in freedoms. It's based in having this right and opportunity. And people give the give shit to the Olympian that fucking rejected her back to the flag. One of the fucking things in the flag is the right to protest the flag. Fucking do it. Doesn't matter. I don't agree if you're supporting, if you're going to the Olympics under that team, then that's kind of fucking like hypocritical. Like you're fucking showing up as us, you not whatever. But I understand the point of the whole thing is it's not like it was before. And there's other things you could say about her too. If you check her Twitter, it wasn't exactly the nicest shit. It was a lot of like, if you're a white woman, why don't you just die? You're not needed here. And it was like, hang on a fucking second. What are you saying? She was very, very kind of weird with her tweets. But at the same time, there is an issue in this country that we need to focus on. It's a mental health issue. But you got to look at the foundation because all we're doing is nursing the effect. It's not helping the cause.
We're treating the symptom, not the actual disease.
That's the main point.
We're addressing the branches, not the root.
You got to look at the core principle in all of this stuff. And people, I just tell people, I'm not anti-government, but I want you to look at what the history of the government is. And you start to realize some shit there where it's like, these aren't conspiracy theories. These are actual shit that they've released. MK Ultra's all real. People don't want to believe in that shit. People say it's all conspiracy. It's like, look, You gotta just understand that it's more about the idea of power. When I was a kid, I used to think the government was always going to be there to help you. Then I went through a battle with medical insurance and you start to realize, no, they're there to fuck you and they just want a bill from you. It goes really, really deep that we're definitely not gonna be able to address in one podcast, but I mean, it's a lot of shit. And that's the whole thing, is just keep an open mind in a lot of things. It's very, very simple, but people don't see it as simple. It seems harder to put down your own beliefs. The hardest thing is just getting out of bed. The easiest thing is just walking into the world with no hatred and nothing else in your mind that's going on.
Right. Well, and that's where I agree with you. And I would say change starts with you. Change starts with me, right? So I'm not responsible for whatever someone else does. I'm responsible for what I do. And if we can all on a micro level begin to focus on being who you were created to be and just being kind, you know, it's a bumper sticker, right? And it's cliche, you know, be kind. And you mentioned earlier the golden rule, do to others what you'd have done to you, right? Once again, it's simple, but it's not easy. But I believe that change starts at that level. I believe that change, you know, if you talk about Martin Luther King Jr., for example, like he wasn't one day automatically one of the greatest civil rights leaders ever. Same thing with Gandhi. There's a process. There's a process of self-revelation and self-discovery that they had to identify the tyranny of the time they lived in. They had to identify what was within them and what was created within them to combat that. And I believe that's just a call that where we're at now, we can either rise to that occasion and say, I am going to stand in direct opposition of the tyranny of the hour I live in, or I'm just going to, whatever, I'm going to
play dead like a possum.
But the choice ultimately, I think, is ours. And that's what I've learned. You know, I think people want to, I'm not, you know, it's like what Sylvester Stallone said in Rocky Balboa. Life ain't all rainbows and sunshine. It's a mean and nasty place, and it'll knock you to your feet and keep you there permanently if you let it. But it's not about how hard you can hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done. You know, now if you know what you're worth, go out there and get what you're worth. But don't blame this person and that person because you're not where you want to be. Losers do that, and you're better than that. I may have watched that a time or two, but I believe that there is so much truth in those few sentences. You know, life is hard, right? It life will beat you to your knees. It will keep you there. And it's not about, oh, I'm a badass, or I'm this, or I'm cool, or I got all these followers or whatever. Because when you're fighting that battle in your bed at 3 a.m. and the demons are taunting you and you just want to give in, that persistence, that light, that hope is what pulls you through. And we fight that individually. That doesn't mean we don't have allies. It means we fight that individually. And it's in those moments where I believe we start to learn who God created us to be. And I think that the more we can become that, the more we benefit one another. The more you become who you were created to be, the more I benefit from that personally, and vice versa. I think that's how we start to win. And I think it's just simply saying no. Like, no, you're not taking my freedom. You're not taking my liberty. I will not capitulate with this. And, you know, on our podcast, we have a couple other guys that have joined us. And the one guy, Norm, he made this comment about all the quarantining and locking down. And because I have three best friends that have lost their businesses. We're talking millions and millions and millions of dollars because of whatever. And they're having to rebuild now. And it's hard. It isn't the easy process. And nobody right now, I think, is right mentally through all this stuff. But, you know, I believe that the good in the American people, that if things were as bad as the bill of goods we were sold, I believe Americans would have volunteered to do what they had to do to help their brothers and sisters. I believe most Americans would have done whatever they needed to do. They wouldn't have had to be regulated. They wouldn't have had to be mandated. They just would have said, I want to save lives. I want to be a good person. I want to help and be generous and charitable. And they're just going to do it. And when you have to force somebody to do it, that changes everything. That changes everything.
I agree with
you. And that's the danger. And that's where we've come to.
I agree with you, but let's cut the pandemic talk, because YouTube is going to flag the shit out of me.
Well,
so I want to make sure that's like, no, everybody's platform. Listen,
we've not had our last 3 or 4 episodes on. We migrated to Rumble, and we've been doing very well on Rumble. But they're more First Amendment centered, I'd say. But, and that's another thing, like you even said earlier, like if we have a dissenting opinion, or we have questions, like, to me, I just want to know, like, this or this. Okay. It's not that I want
it out for yourself.
Right. It's not that I want to be argumentative for argument's sake. I want to know, well, what does this mean? What is this, this, and this? And if you refuse that information to anybody, suspicion naturally is just going to occur. And I don't think that's just me. I think that, like, with you or with whomever, you know, well, you can't know that. Well, why can't I have this information that's going to impact what decisions I need to make in my life?
I want to wrap on two things. One, yes, you mentioned past guest Jordan Peterson. Shout out to him. Number two, Sylvester Stallone.
Yes.
You know how his face got like that?
Yeah, he was actually born that way. It was like when he was being birthed, there was some.
The doctor grabbed him with forceps, yeah, and pinched, yes, his face. That's nuts, man.
Yeah. So Stallone's actually. He's a hero of mine. He really is.
He's next week's episode.
Seriously?
Yeah, Jordan Peterson was like 100 episodes ago, and then Stallone's next week.
Wow.
That's just kidding. I'm kidding.
Oh, you.
I don't reach out to famous people, man. It's more of a pain in the ass. It messes with my flow of conversation. It's hard to get past the whole fame aspect when you start talking to someone you've seen on the big screen. You're like, oh my God. And they just want questions. I'm like, I'm not questions, man.
Yeah. Well, when I was a music journalist, it was some, there were like, when I interviewed Run DMC like that. Yeah. That's a little intimidating, but I get it.
Intimidating as shit. Yeah. Kill people. No. where can people find your book? Where can people find your podcast?
Yeah. Okay, great. Yeah. So this is the cover again. Actually, I designed it, did all of it. The Smith's Heart of Man Repair Manual. It's on Amazon. It's in any local, or if you have a bookstore in your community, which they're diminishing, which says a lot, but just, you can order it there, print on demand. Flawedcast CLE, website's flawedinc.com. You know, I can get you a copy if you want. I'm not, like I said, it's not even the money. I just want to give this out, you know, to if I can help people. Like, and I know that might sound trivial or cliche, but like, you know, that's, this whole process has changed me in a way I never expected. And I used to think nobody gives a shit, but I've been confronted with evidence that people do. And in my heart and how I process things, I'm confronted with evidence. I can't dismiss that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Smith's Heart of Man Repair Manual. It's on Amazon ebook, paperback, obviously. So I appreciate any support. Flawedcast, Flawedcast CLE, anywhere podcasts are.
I'll make sure I link it all in the description. I'm sure this will be one of a couple more we'll probably have down the pike. I don't plan on waiting 500 episodes. I think I'll have you on sooner than that.
That'd be great, brother. I'm always honored. I'm always honored. And I'm proud of what you're doing, man. And I just want to send you off with this. I haven't been able to listen to all the 500, but I've listened to a number of them, and just seeing your arc. And this is why I want to encourage you. If you feel like you have things to say, don't discount yourself, man, because I just, you know, we talk here and there sporadically, and I don't think you give yourself enough credit. And there's a lot within you that helps people and that will continue to help people. And as you grow as a man and as a human, you're going to continue to see the fruit of that. So I want to encourage you that you're in your lane, you're connecting people, you're doing the work, and you're doing what a lot of people wish they could do. So I want to encourage you with that. And I look forward to talking with you again soon. And you know, until then, I appreciate everything you do.
For sure, man. I appreciate it, man. And thank you for making me blush on air at the end of the episode. but thanks everybody for listening, and we'll catch you next episode.